Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, this is Justine Rotolo, also known as Miss ADD. I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening to the Miss ADD Hour. So last week, my friend Lee was here to talk about meditation. He's a meditation expert, and I hope all of you had an opportunity to listen to that show if you didn't listen live. So the same process this week, really about mindfulness, is the first step in getting healthy and being able to get in control of our ADD symptoms. The negative ADD symptoms is called self-awareness. So what I want to do is talk a little bit about self-awareness and how it relates to ADHD and in the whole recovery process of the negative symptoms. And then I have one of my clients that came in today to talk to all of us about how she's doing and how her life has changed since she's become more self-aware. So what I plan on doing with this self-awareness issue today is I want to talk a little bit about myself and tell you how the process for me getting healthy really began with self-awareness and the steps involved in that and how I was able to recognize things. So I was diagnosed with ADHD 19 years ago, and that really explained the struggles that I had had in my life, and it was a relief because I finally had answers that I thought to the negative times I experienced in school, professionally, when I got a job, when I worked in the business world, and then also in my intimate relationships. So at first, I thought I had found the answer with medication because it initially lessened the severity of my negative symptoms of ADHD. But as the years progressed and I was feeling good about what I was accomplishing, I was getting things done, I was a little bit more organized, I wasn't in complete control of my ADHD symptoms, but I thought I was really getting there. But then the question came up, but who was I? Because I really didn't know who I was. I thought my relationship with my husband and my sons were great, but as I would soon discover, they were both falling apart. Communication, I always thought, was my strong suit. I was a great talker. I didn't see myself as controlling, although I grew up in a family where there was a lot of control, but I thought I was the antithesis of that. I also saw myself as a very positive person, very happy, positive, always seeing the glass as half full. But what I soon discovered was that I was nowhere near to understanding who I was. And more important than that, how my behaviors were seen by or affected other people that I had relationships with. And those relationships were not only intimate, they could be my business relationships as well. It was very difficult to hear people in my life tell me what I originally believed about myself was just a facade. But I was in a place in my life where I recognized I needed to take responsibility, not only for my life, but for my behavior. I was really tired. I was tired of just how I behaved, what I was feeling. Things just weren't going right. So I began to listen when I would hear people that were close to me talk about negative comments about how I behaved. And instead of denying them or arguing with the person that was telling these things to me, I began to embrace them for change. This was not an easy process. It was a very difficult process. And as it progressed, I realized more and more just how difficult it was. But I was determined to stay on this path. Many of my issues in relationships were not only related to my negative symptoms of ADD, they were also related to my past. My need for control stemmed from my own insecurities that grew over many years of my empty emotional buckets. I just, as a child, was not being filled up. And I'm not about blaming my parents. I'm about saying that my parents most likely didn't know any better at that point in time. So I eventually was able to see just how negative I really was. And as I began to pay attention to my thoughts, they were negative, and they were also full of judgmental thoughts for everyone I came in contact with. So again, I started to realize that since ADD was a disability of regulation, it was almost impossible for me to regulate my emotions. I would feel hurt or angry, and those feelings would come over me like a tidal wave. I just felt like I had to explode and retaliate for whatever negative emotion I was feeling. In my process of self-awareness, I realized that in order to regulate, I had to sit with the feelings or emotions for at least 2 days before I addressed them. What I noticed was amazing. The same feelings or emotions that would send me into outer space had now dissipated over 2 days. So I was able to go back to the situation that made me feel sad or angry or hurt and address it in a completely different way than I ever had before. I was so happy. I began to see myself as a positive person, only this time it was for real, whereas in the past it wasn't. Communication. Yes, I was a great talker. Too much talk. Not enough listening. What I began to see is that I talked over others. And the times when I was afraid I was going to forget what to reply to them, I'm sure a lot of you out there who are ADD can relate to that, because when someone's talking and we're getting excited about what we want to say back, we feel like we're going to forget it. So I would interrupt with no regard for how they felt. I also wanted to control the outcome of difficult conversations, which did not bode well for my intimate relationship. I can still remember the day I gave up control. One would think that after years and years of controlling everything and everyone around me to get the outcome I wanted, this would be very difficult. And it was. It was difficult to think about having to give up control. The decision to let go and understand the only person I could control was me left me in a place of peace in the moment on steroids, because it was so peaceful. This happened 4 years ago, and it continues today. There are times, yes, when I struggle somewhat with this, especially as it relates to my boy, my son. But when I feel that energy change and I feel like I want to start controlling things, I pull back and release and let that go. Let me give you an example of this letting go process. I got a call from Chris, who's my oldest son, this morning. He and I have struggled to get to a healthy place since at one time he and I were enmeshed. So we were so close we couldn't pull apart. We were finishing each other's sentences. This was not a good thing, but at the time, being a mom, I thought this was great, because I felt like I was really in control of this relationship. He was diagnosed this year with bipolar 2, and although it seems like a death sentence to many, to him it was a blessing. He had struggled for many years with drug and alcohol abuse, and now being on the right medication has helped him to get to a better place. He's doing great, he's back in school, and has direction and goals. We have tried to communicate openly, but there are still those emotions that can stop that process. So this morning, when he called, he immediately apologized for not returning my call I made to him on Thursday. And I told him I understood this, because I do. He's very busy, and this is no longer all about me. And that's a big part of this process that a lot of people struggle with. That whole idea of something not being about you, but about letting it go and being about the other person. So that's what I did with him on the phone. I told him that I had seen a Facebook picture this week of him and his girlfriend, and he really looked great. And I said, you know, I realized after seeing that picture how much I miss you. And his response was not what I was expecting. I thought he would say, I miss you too, Mom. Instead, he said, I know. So the old me, the Justine or Miss ADD of 4 or 5 years ago, would have immediately attacked him by saying, oh, you don't miss me? But instead, I let it go, took a deep breath and stayed in the moment, and just was very happy that I was on the phone talking to my son. He's 25, soon to be 26, and I feel blessed that he calls me and wants to stay in touch with me. So at some point, possibly weeks from now, I will discuss this with him just to see if he and I are okay. So this brings me to my next realization about my intimate relationship. I expected everyone, including my sons, to take care of my emotions. Why? I'm sure a lot of you out there are asking. Because you're a mom, why would you expect that? Well, maybe you can relate to this. Well, the answer lies in the fact that I never grew up. Hard to believe, here I was 54 years old and still very much a little girl. I have noticed that most of my adult clients have never grown up. We struggle with this because most of our stories from the past are very negative stories, stifling our emotional growth. So this is very difficult. It's painful work. It's very painful, but it's well worth it. Because the whole process of giving that little child inside of you compassion and love is a powerful, powerful process. I do this with my clients who want to end their pain and suffering. And like I said before, most of us who are adult with ADD, we've had a lot of suffering through our childhood, adolescent, and early adulthood. It's a process that brings us out of childhood and into adulthood. This is the last step in the self-awareness process, but it's the most important step because it frees us from the past and it really enables us to stay in the moment, which is that place where all the negative symptoms of ADD, procrastination, inability to focus, can't pay attention, communication issues, they go on and on. All those symptoms tend to dissipate. You no longer engage with your thoughts and your feelings. You just notice them as if they're balloons that are flying overhead. You are able to take care of your own emotions. And finally, through this whole process, you develop internal validation. Internal validation is feeling good about yourself and not worrying what other people think or feel. This is big because when we experience this, we no longer look to the outside to feel good about ourselves. At last, we are happy adults. We are in control of our negative symptoms of ADD, and we are happy and peaceful. So do me a favor, for all of you who are struggling out there with negative symptoms of ADHD, try this process. And if you have an issue trying the process alone, contact me if you're in the area. You can contact me on my website at missadd.com or come to my support group on Wednesday nights held at the Center for Learning Unlimited in Torrance, California, and it's from 7:30 to 9, and we look forward to seeing you. So, there's nobody calling in, so I think what we're going to do is we're going to talk to my client, and I'd like to introduce you to Monique.
Hi there.
And so Monique and I have been working together now for, I guess, about 6 or 7 months, and I really wanted you to talk to the audience a little bit about your whole experience with becoming self-aware, since we've done a lot of work on that, and how it relates to helping you with your negative symptoms of ADD.
Okay. Well, I think that becoming more self-aware has helped me to let go of a lot of negative thoughts I had about myself. Like, for example, I can sometimes be clumsy and I always spill the water on the counter. I don't know what it is about me and water. It's just like always all over the floor. And I used to just like curse myself out about that. And now I've gotten to a place where I guess I guess before I would curse myself like in this automatic way, it would just come out. And now when that happens, when I spill the water, I can just let it go. And I can actually kind of laugh and realize how nice it is that I'm not beating myself up about it.
So would you beat yourself up about other things as well?
Yeah.
And were most of the things that you beat yourself up about related to ADD and the negative symptoms?
I think some of them were related to ADD. I think it was also coming from like a perfectionist expectation.
Okay, now that's interesting because a lot of people with ADD have co-occurring disorders. And one of those co-occurring disorders is anxiety. And it's underneath, I guess you could say, the ADD. And perfection is a big issue for a lot of people. So let's just talk a little bit about that before we get back to self-awareness. Where do you think, because this is a self-aware thing, where do you think the perfection came from? When did it start? And
Well, now when I see my nephew, who's only 4,
okay,
he's already a perfectionist like me.
Wow.
Like, his blocks fall down, and he throws a tantrum, and I'm like, oh, my God. So it makes me wonder if it's, like, kind of genetic or something. But despite that, I think it was reinforced from my parents because they wanted me to, like, be the best at everything I did so that I would succeed.
Okay.
So they were always pushing me to be perfect at things.
So if you came home with a B, then it wasn't good enough.
Right.
It had to be A.
Yeah, it had to be 100%.
It okay.
couldn't be like 95%. It had to be 100.
So let's say you were in class and you got, you know, a 95 and on the way home, how would you feel?
I think I would feel kind of excited because I did well, but then kind of like anxious or apprehensive because I didn't know how they would respond.
And when you brought in the 95, was their response usually, well, why didn't you get 100?
Yeah.
So they didn't really recognize the positive of 95. They were looking for the perfection
mm-hmm.
of 100, which really speaks to how you ended up with that perfection issue.
Right.
But it is very much related to perfectionism, anxiety
mm-hmm.
disorder. And you know what? Speaking of that, I think next week what we're going to do is do co-occurring disorders with ADD. So that would be depression, anxiety, bipolar, some personality disorders. We'll just run the gamut on all that. And if any of you have questions next week, you can call in. So let's get back to Monique and self-awareness. So how difficult was it for you to be able to take responsibility for your behaviors that you hadn't really dealt with for years since you started coming to me and we're working together?
Like, how difficult was it for me to, like, own up to my perfectionism?
That, and I know one of the things that you and I talk about a lot is you get into bad moods.
Uh-huh.
So if you could talk a little bit about owning up to the bad moods and what you've mm-hmm. done about that.
Well, I think before I would get really swept up in my mood swings and not really be aware that I was even fluctuating very much.
Okay.
So, like, I would just be feeling bad and I didn't know why. So now it's nice that there's a little bit of separation where I've actually, you know, come to the conclusion that I happen to be a moody person for whatever reason. So I don't judge myself so much about it.
Okay, so let's talk about a moody person.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I could say that there was a time in my life when I was very much a moody person. That's not who I am anymore. I don't think it really was who I was now either. Except I was engaging with my thoughts. And engaging with my thoughts, my negative thoughts, put me in that bad mood. Do you think any of that is happening with you?
Yeah, I think that I kind of cling to a thought.
Okay.
And I can't get it out of my mind.
Okay.
Like, I have a hard time focusing on other things and being present because I get kind of consumed by something.
Okay. And so we've done some work together And you also come to the group on Wednesday nights. We've done work on how to just notice those thoughts. Has that been difficult for you to just notice them and not engage with them?
Well, last week when you were talking with Lee about meditation, and he was talking about how when the thought comes, just label it as thought. Like, I've been doing that lately. It's kind of helped detach myself from it, but also not analyze it.
Which is right, which is great.
Because I'm a big analyzer.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of us are. And analyzing thoughts, it's funny because it doesn't really make a lot of sense because the thoughts are not you. The thoughts are separate of you. It's just things that come up in our brain, our head, starts playing games with us.
Mm-hmm.
And we jump from one thought, negative thought, to another,
mm-hmm.
related to the same subject, but it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse and worse, which can really cause us to be in a bad mood. Being in a bad mood can cause us to have dysfunctional relationships because one minute we're okay, and then the next minute we're all down and out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I'm sure, been difficult for people that you're close to. Like, can you talk a little bit about any long-term relationships you've had where you've noticed that those kind of behaviors have affected it?
Yeah, well, I think that when I was married, I was like completely, I don't know if I was completely unaware, but I just, you know, I didn't really realize the severity of my depression and mood swings, and I didn't know I had ADD at that time.
Okay.
So, you know, in hindsight, I think back, like, oh, you know, it's too bad. Like, I feel bad for my ex-husband, you know, that he had to, that was probably a lot of pressure for him to deal with that kind of personality and not really have any tools and not even be aware.
How would he deal with it?
He would usually try to calm me down. I remember a couple times it was kind of a wake-up call for me because I would sometimes just lose my temper and just start, you know, complaining about someone. And a couple times he said, you know what, you just have to stop. I just can't. And it kind of made me aware, like, how much my negativity was.
When he would tell you to stop, would that make you angry?
No, not necessarily, because I could understand what he was saying because my dad is that way, and I knew how he was feeling. But I also just, it was like I couldn't control my anger.
Okay.
So,
and now you feel with the work we've done and coming to the group that you have the tools, you think, to control the anger that you're now aware of that comes up?
I think it's a lot better. I don't think it's like 100%, but I have more of a success rate now of like kind of getting myself off that moving train.
Okay. Well, that's great. So we're going to come back to Monique, but I just got a question from the audience. So I have a teenager who is ADD and seems to be pretty impulsive. I have a girlfriend who lives with us, and at times it seems like they are like two angry cats, always snipping at each other and arguing. So what should I do? Is this normal? This is a great question, and I appreciate this question because it's about teenagers who I love. I think they're great, especially ones with ADD. So if you remember, in my own walk that I took in self-awareness, I talked about the fact that ADD is a disability of regulation. So that's really what impulsivity is. And at its height, at its worst in teenagers, it's one of the co-occurring disorders, which is called oppositional defiance disorder, which, again, we're going to go into depth next week. But what can also happen is if there is a situation where there's not a biological mom and dad, and I'm not saying that, you know, that if you're biological, it's going to be perfect, but there's other factors that come into play. So you have a girlfriend that lives with you I don't know if your wife passed away or your wife and you were divorced and you have full custody or part-time custody of your children. You know, these kind of situations that are out of their emotional control, out of their control, can make them feel very angry, very sad, very hurt. And it's difficult sometimes for teenagers to really talk about how they feel, since they may not even recognize it. So this is where you get some of that fighting and that snipping, and then the adults get angry because they want respect. But really what needs to happen is communication needs to be improved in the family. Parenting skills need to be worked on. This is not just an issue where you send your teenager to coaching or therapy and we take care of him. No, the entire family and the dynamic and communication in the family needs to change. So I don't know where this person is from or how far away they live. If you need to contact me, please do so on my website at missadd.com. And I really hope I answered your question and it helps a little bit. And now I have another question that says, I'm going through a divorce. Hang on, because I have to put my glasses on because I'm blind. I'm going through a divorce. We were married for 20 years and we have two adult children. How should we handle this with our children? And then it goes on, if she is saying things to our children about divorce, if he is saying things or she is, I guess this is from the man. If she is saying things to our children about the divorce, what should I say or do? Okay, so these are adult children, and I guess what's happening is they're being put in the middle of this divorce, which I have to tell you, in my practice, it's one of the things that I tell my clients is totally unacceptable. We don't ever want to do that to our children, whether they're little or they're teenagers or they're adults, because it comes down to the fact that even though the two of you are getting divorced, you will always be their dad and she will always be their mom. What I can offer to you in terms of suggestions would be, see if you can get your daughters into therapy to help them talk to somebody objective about how they're feeling. And if you feel like you can talk to your ex-wife, please either discuss with her how I mentioned this is affecting the children. And if that doesn't work and she doesn't stop, then my suggestion would be that when the girls go into therapy, you see if the girls can get her to just come in so the therapist can talk to her about this. Sometimes authority figures are important in these kind of situations to tell people what needs to happen and not happen when it comes to divorce, because it's so difficult on the kids. It's really, really hard on them. And even the older they are, the worse it can be, because they're so used to the two of you being together. If you've been married for 30 years and now all of a sudden their family as they knew it, that nuclear family, is now changing, going to be different. It can be very, it can be heart-wrenching for them. So just pay attention to that as you're going through it. And I hope I answered your question. So let's now get back to my client, Monique, who was kind enough to come in and spend time with us today. And so I guess I just want to get back to self-awareness. And since I talk about it's the first step in getting healthy, because I don't think anybody can really get healthy, no matter what the disability is or the mental challenge is, until we're aware of our behaviors. I mean, there are some of us who are incapable of that,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think in this population, we're incapable of it. So I think I want to talk a little bit more about how this helped you in becoming self-aware. Maybe you can give the audience, the people who are listening, a few examples of what negative symptoms of ADD did this help you to more be able to control than before in becoming self-aware?
Well, I think that I noticed that my ability to focus is really contingent on how I'm feeling.
Okay.
Like if I'm upset about something or having negative thoughts about something, it's hard for me to focus because I can get swept up in that. So I think the self-awareness has helped me recognize that I'm actually getting swept up. And so then I can practice, you know, being in the moment more and just like letting it go, or just saying like, okay, this isn't the time for that right now. Right now you have to do your work.
Okay. Now, you're very creative. That I do know about you.
Uh-huh.
Excuse me. So how do the negative symptoms of ADD interfere with your, creativity?
Well, I think my main obstacle is just being able to finish things on time.
Okay. What about starting projects? Is that...
Yeah, sometimes starting projects too.
So walk us through that process because you're a photographer, you're an artist, you do so many things. You're one of those people that I'm so amazed and impressed because you can do just about any kind of creative thing that you put your mind to. So you're so creative, but when it comes down to starting something, what is it about that starting process that can stop you?
Well, I think I have two experiences. One experience is if I'm really excited about something, I want to start it right that moment. And then I get worried if I don't start it right then, I'm going to lose my momentum. But
okay.
Sometimes I can't because I have other priorities.
Okay.
But usually when I'm afraid to start, usually when I can't start something, it's because I'm afraid of the outcome.
So you have fear.
Yeah. Like I'm anxious that I'm not going to do it right, or the client's going to find out that I'm not what they think I am, or whatever.
Okay. So it's fear. I'm going to
bring
that up again because I think what happens to all of us in the process of the mindfulness process and even in self-awareness, because when we get fearful and we see something about ourselves that we feel is very difficult to either look at or to down the road change, we're going to push it aside because it brings up fear.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas what we really need to do is kind of through that fear, because in pushing through the fear and releasing it, what they say about the creative mindset is the creativity, just the boundaries are limitless when the fear dissipates. And have you noticed that at all about yourself?
Yeah, I think that, you know, when I do, like when I just draw without having any expectation of what it is, I feel really free and very creative and happy, and it becomes a really, like, enriching process for me.
And do people notice that your drawings at that point in time, has anybody ever commented on how free they look or how...
Yeah, actually, I have an artist friend who's an illustrator, and he's part of why I started drawing again. And he recently told me, like, oh, I can really feel all this freedom, and I want to get back to that place, and I feel like I haven't. And
that's great. That must have really made you feel great.
Yeah, it was nice because I told him, because he was basically telling me that I was inspiring him, and I reminded him, well, you inspired me to draw again, so... I guess it's nice to have that kind of synergy and, like, supportive system.
It is.
With another artist and friend.
And it's also you can look at it as a form of accountability, I guess, too.
Uh-huh.
You know, have you ever tried, if you have a project to do, have you tried to hook up with somebody to say, can you help me get through this?
Yeah, I have. But the thing is, I think... So many people I know are not really any better at this than I am.
Okay.
So sometimes the system just falls through, you know?
Okay.
Like, I had set something up with a friend that I would send them a photo every day. And sometimes he'd respond and sometimes he wouldn't, which it wasn't his responsibility. But I realized that that would have helped me kind of keep it up.
Did you explain to him that you... wanted to do this with him, that this is important that you wanted to be held accountable? Did you explain that, or did you?
You know, I think I did tell him that I needed someone else to be accountable, but I don't think that I emphasized that this was important to me and to really ask if he could commit to it.
Okay. So maybe that was the step that you missed
in
asking him.
Yeah.
Okay. Because the other thing that I noticed in our population, especially people who are highly creative like yourself, they start a project and they get 3/4 of the way through and they get excited. Wow, I'm almost done. This is so great. And then they can't finish it.
Yeah.
I know I've been there myself. Not that I'm close to being as creative as you are, but I have been there even in papers that I did in graduate school that get all excited because they were 3/4 of the way done. But to finish it was like such a chore. So do you notice that?
Yeah.
With yourself?
Yeah, like I have a project that for various reasons has dragged on for like a year. And that particular client is just difficult to work with.
Okay.
And I'm like 99.5% done, and I feel like I'm pushing a boulder up a hill just to finish it.
Well, let me ask you, let me put it in another way. Could it also be that you're not as secure in your work as other people are? And so in finishing this and finally handing it over to the client, your fear may be that they don't like it?
Oh, I think that's there for sure. Yeah. There's definitely a fear, especially because this particular client has been very pushy, which doesn't necessarily have to do anything with my talent, but more just that they don't know what they want.
Okay.
So I'm just so worried that when I quote unquote finish it, it's not really going to be done.
Okay. So let's talk about how to release that kind of thing, because I know that that's going to hurt your success in the company that you ultimately want to have.
Uh-huh.
So internal validation, I talked about it before, which is probably the last step in the self-awareness. Because once we become all self-aware and we're doing the things we need to do to be that healthy person that we always wanted to be, we develop that internal validation, those positive feelings inside that don't have to come from the outside. Doesn't matter if the client likes it or doesn't like it. What matters is that you're comfortable with it,
mm-hmm.
and you pass it on. And what I think you're going to notice is as you pass it on, your own feelings about the project are going to come through to the client, but you're frozen there.
Uh-huh.
You're not there yet.
Yeah.
So I think that the work that you and I need to do a little bit more on is the whole self-awareness process to get to that internal validation, because do you feel you have that?
You know, it comes and goes.
Okay.
I definitely don't feel like I have that with this project.
Okay. And is that related to the people that you're dealing with?
Yeah, in part. It's also kind of like something new that I haven't done with other clients before.
Okay.
So I think I'm doubting my abilities to do it properly.
Okay. Are they very much like you in terms of being perfectionist?
I'm not sure.
You never got that feeling from them?
Yeah, not really.
Okay. Because sometimes
there's two of them. There's two partners. So one of them, no, and the other one, yes.
So the one that's yes, do you have a harder time with him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because sometimes when we're getting mirrored back from somebody, our own behaviors, that can make us feel very anxious.
Mm.
And it can make us feel very like, I don't want to deal with this person because I see myself. And that's where we have to become more self-aware and accepting and change those behaviors if we can. You know, let's talk a little bit about control. How do you see yourself as a very controlling person?
Yeah.
You do? Okay. Do you see that as a negative, or do you see that as something you're comfortable with?
I think I see it more as a negative.
Okay. Can you give me some examples of how you're controlling?
Well, I think it's, again, related to the perfectionism. Like, I sometimes try to control the outcome.
Okay.
Of a project or an interaction or whatever.
A date. Okay. Because I know lately you've been starting to date again.
Uh-huh.
Which
actually with that, I've been very good at practicing letting go of expectation.
That's great.
So I'm getting better about it. But I definitely notice it with friends, like, that I care about when they're going through something difficult. I will have a tendency to, like, want to fix it, and I have to always remind myself that I can't control it, and I can't control them. Or
that's great. Is that working for you?
Yeah, it helps. I mean, I'd like to get to a place where I don't even think about how I should fix their lives.
Right, because you can't.
Yeah.
Because the only person that you can change, control, or fix is you.
Yeah.
And that can be very difficult for people. And the people that are extremely controlling and are not self-aware, they're very difficult to deal with in the therapeutic setting as well.
Mm-hmm.
When you're trying to get them to, you try to facilitate some change for them, but it's impossible because they're stuck
mm-hmm.
in that place of, I'm not controlling, or, you know, I don't do those kind of things. So that's why I talk about self-awareness being the first step in getting healthy. Because if we're totally unaware,
mm-hmm.
let's talk about your parents for a minute. You think your dad, even though I know he's a great guy and you love him, do you think he's aware of a lot of his behavior?
Not exactly. Like, he'll have lucid moments, but just fall back into the old pattern.
Right. And if you bring up to him things like, you know, when I was a little girl or a teenager, I felt that when I came home with grades, they weren't good enough. Does he say, I'm sorry, I guess I see that, or he doesn't say
it? We just don't have those conversations.
What's your concern about having those conversations?
You know, he's kind of a difficult person to talk to. Like, he has ADD among probably other things, and it's much more severe than mine.
Okay.
So sometimes he just spaces out.
Oh,
so it's
okay.
Just hard to have a conversation.
Okay. So basically what you do with your dad is accept him the way he is. And that's okay.
Yeah. Because I don't really know that bringing up his perfectionism or his expectations of me in the past, I don't really know if it's going to help anything.
Right. Okay. I mean, what I was thinking about was it would help you to better communicate with him going forward than it would if you just left it alone. But if you're comfortable and feel like you communicate with him okay.
I think I actually have more of a feeling to communicate that with my mom than my dad.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think in a way I still feel some of that expectation. Even though I think she knows that I'm a perfectionist, but she tries to reassure me by telling me you're doing great, you have so many accomplishments, blah, blah, blah. But still I feel like she's only interested in talking to me when I have something going on. Like, she wants to know, okay, do you have an exhibit or do you have an article or...
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I don't know if that's...
So you don't feel total acceptance from her for who you are. It's more about what you do?
Yeah, in a way, because she'll ask me what I've been doing, and if it's something really mundane or, you know, if it's not like getting an award, then she doesn't seem interested and she'll say something like, okay, well, it sounds like you're working or something, so I'll let you go. Or you sound busy, so I'll let you go. And I'm like, I'm not busy. And then it's like this awkward conversation, you know?
So she doesn't check in with you to see, are you busy? Is this a good time to talk?
Sometimes she does.
Okay.
But I feel like sometimes she uses a busy excuse because I'm not entertaining her with like some really
wow
entertaining life.
or a life that she thinks is like totally successful.
Yeah.
Because she has expectations that you don't. Very different.
Yeah.
Because what I know about you in working with you is how incredibly creative you are, but also that you like to have fun.
Yeah.
You really like to have fun. Like, you work hard, but you want to go out and have a good time. So it's not, you have a good balance in your life. It's not like work is totally consuming you.
Yeah.
So you think that we still have some work to do in terms of your negative symptoms of ADD?
Definitely.
And the struggle with depression?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to talk a little bit about depression, but I have some questions here that I want to share with the listening audience. So this a woman writes in, I have recently become aware, self-aware, that I'm being blamed by my husband for everything that goes wrong. No matter what goes wrong, somehow blame gets assigned to me. What does that mean? What can I do to change that? Okay. Well, I like to tell people that I work with, if you're with somebody in your life that everything is everybody else's problem or fault, and it's not theirs, that they should put their track shoes on. And you think it's very funny, but it's dealing with somebody with a personality disorder, whatever kind of personality disorder that is, can be next to impossible to live with. And this is one of the first red flags in looking at people who possibly have a personality disorder. And that's when they blame everybody else for their stuff. Like I used to say about my ex-husband, you know, he used to blame World War II on me. And he really did. So that's something that I would suggest you try to get yourself into therapy. If you want to contact me again, you can at missadd.com. Or if you're not in the area, you try to reach out to another therapist and get in there and talk about you, because your self-esteem is really getting damaged through this whole interaction with this person, who in many ways is verbally and emotionally abusive. And your last part of this question is, what can I do to change that? You have to change yourself. And in changing yourself, what I mean by that is the way you communicate with this person, the way you interact with this person. You have to get strong and get that internal validation, so that in dealing with him very directly, you're a very positive, strong person, that he understands you're not somebody that he could just roll over. So I hope that helps whoever it was that sent that question in, because I think it's really important for us to get out of those kind of situations in a positive way. Okay, so here's from a gentleman who asked, I am ADD and have trouble both starting and finishing projects. What's stopping me? So Monique and I were just discussing that, especially if you're very creative. And even if you're not, most of us with ADD have a hard time starting projects. We have a hard time continuing the project. And then when we get close to the end, we have a hard time finishing the project. And what I've noticed in the world of mindfulness, as it deals with the negative symptoms of ADD, and this is one of them, this is about fear. And it's fear that, I don't know, it's you're a perfectionist, you're afraid to do something wrong. Fear stops that creative process from happening. So my suggestion would be to become self-aware, start really, really looking at yourself and determining, are you a perfectionist? Are you living in a place of fear? Are you engaging in your thoughts nonstop? And that's what's really heightening all these negative symptoms that you're having. Do that kind of work and see what happens. See what comes up for you.
Can I interject something? I thought of another reason why I don't start projects, and it's because I usually think they're going to take me way longer than they do. So I like build it up in my head, and
okay,
then I just get totally overwhelmed.
And that's another subject that we're going to get into on another Sunday. But one of the issues for people with ADD is we don't do well with negotiating time.
Mm-hmm.
When we start a project, if we don't set it up through time, but just through, you know, a task, we may end up doing something for 6 hours. And the next thing we know, we're looking at the clock, and what probably could have taken 2 hours now took six. So you're right. We have to become more time aware. And that's a whole nother Sunday that we're going to do it on, but it's a really good point. Okay, so here's another question from a woman. When people piss me off, what should I do? Usually I get carried away and can't stop thinking about it, and I want to get back at them. What can I do to not feel this way? Well, this is a really good question. And it's something that happens to all of us, not only in the ADD population. We talked about the regulation of emotions. So when somebody says something to us that hits our stuff, so for example, if we have a fear of rejection, that's an unblocked energy from the past. For something that happened to us, whether in our childhood or adolescent or early adulthood, we hold on to that. And so if somebody hits that rejection part of us that we're so fearful of, we're going to get very upset. We're going to start spinning with those thoughts. That's what I like to call it, because now we're engaging with the thoughts and we want to get back at this person because they hurt us. Okay. So what this person wants to know, what can I do? Well, first of all, if somebody says something to you that upsets you, if you could take a step back and hold on to those feelings, those emotions, for 2 days before you answer the person. If the person hits your stuff, says something that really, really upsets you, instead of answering them right there, you can say very kindly and assertively, you know, I'm not ready to really address how I feel about what you said. What you'll notice is if you sit with these feelings, these emotions for at least 2 days, what you felt initially is going to be taken way down. So instead of a tidal wave, this is going to be a tiny little ripple after 2 days are up. And as you notice this is the self-awareness process. As you notice how this works, then you're not going to get as upset when people hit your stuff. You're going to be able to take it down pretty quickly, sit with these feelings for a couple of days, and then be able to go back and address it with this person in a totally different way, even, dare I say, possibly seeing what's going on with this person that they had to say this hurtful thing to you in the first place. So I hope that this answers that question. This is something that is not an easy process. It takes a lot of work, and that's why I keep telling everybody who is in the listening area, if they want help and they want to start doing the mindfulness process for ADD, ADHD, self-awareness, please contact me at missadd.com. Okay, so here's from a mom who says, sometimes my kids talk poorly. Sometimes they are short or sarcastic with me. Usually I see it as it's happening, but I can't seem to catch or connect them. I just shut down and get quiet with my hurt. What should I do? This is a really, really good question, because I think one of the things that we want to do, especially with our kids who were diagnosed with ADD, is to be a role model for them about communication. So again, I know that if our children speak to us poorly, immediately we look at it as a lack of respect and we get very angry and we get hurt. And we want to tell them, you can't speak to me that way, I'm your parent, which is absolutely the message they need to get. But I think the message can be given to them in a different way. If you tell them how they spoke to you made you feel, so if your child is being nasty, sarcastic, and you stop and say, you know, I want to tell you how what you just said is making me feel. I feel so sad. And what I find is that if we use sad more than hurt and angry, there isn't as much defensiveness that comes up from the person that we're speaking to, whether they're children, adolescents, or adults. So I would try that in your response. I'm feeling sad. And I'm feeling sad because I'm your mom. I love you. I know that I do a lot for you. And I guess I'm wondering, what's going on? why do you feel the need right now to talk to me the way you're talking to me? Get a dialogue going. Communicate with them. Talk about you and how you feel, and you will see that they will start to open up. If you start to attack them, that process is just not going to happen. So I hope that whoever sent this question in, that was helpful, that answer that I gave you. It's so important, communication with your kids, adolescents, the young adults. It's really important for them, for you to role model to them how to talk. So we do have some more questions, but what I want to do, because we're almost at the end of the program for today, is to spend a little bit more time with Monique, because she also has, in addition to anxiety, she has a co-occurring disorder with ADD, and that's depression, which you're on medication for.
Right.
Okay. And tell me how that's been helping you, the medication with the depression.
I think it's mainly just stabilized mood. So I used to be really up and down. Like, I would crash really hard and, like, start crying. And so it was just hard to get on with life and kind of move forward with those constant interruptions.
Okay.
So it just, like, keeps the line where I can actually work on myself more and be more receiving of helpful information, because I'm not having to, like, respond to my breakdowns as much.
So I would imagine that even though you're on meds, that at times you still feel down.
Yeah.
But do you notice that with the work that we're doing together and the meds, because the two are really good together, and I'm going to tell everybody out there, don't get medication from your regular doctor. If you need psychotropic medication, please, I'm begging all of you, this is so important, to go to a psychiatrist, because they are the only people that really understand these meds. So what you're noticing then is that with the work we're doing, that if you do get down, that you could pull yourself back out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And pretty quickly would be an hour, 2 hours a day.
Yeah, like a couple hours.
Okay. Whereas before, it would be ongoing.
Yeah.
Okay. So in the whole self-awareness process and the work that we do on that, is it quicker now for you to be aware when you are starting to spiral down in terms of depression?
Yeah, I think it is. I don't think I'm like 100% aware, because sometimes I notice much later that I'm like in the thick of it.
Okay.
But still, it's a lot better than it used to be.
Okay. So then it's a combination, but you would also encourage anybody who's on meds to get therapy or coaching at the same time.
Yeah, because I think in a way, I mean, it's hard to define what's working better, but I think the coaching and therapy may have like a longer term effect than the medicine.
That's a really good point, because one of the things that they have determined is that talk therapy, you know, whether it's coaching or talk therapy, can actually change the chemicals in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at the end of the show. This hour went by so fast. I really enjoyed spending time with you, Monique. Thank you so much for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I want to thank everybody out there for listening and for the questions that I got today. So again, if you want to contact me, missadd.com, or you can come into our group on Wednesday nights at the Center for Learning Unlimited in Torrance, 7:30 to 9. I will see you next week. We're going to talk about co-occurring disorders with ADD. Have a great day. This is Miss ADD signing off.